The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 2nd of March, 2021. On the podcast today, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent, now the author of The Crypto Trader. We talk about Bitcoin, lots of other coins as well, and then the crypto space, very hot at the moment. Plus, we talk about people ramping on the crypto space and talking your own book. Also, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most read RNSs. You can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. Plus, you'll see lots of other content. There's an article there. It's called Vietnam, the next 5 years. That's a webinar. There you can check that out. And, of course, there's Vietnam Holding Limited, an investment there listed on the stock exchange. I've chatted to Craig quite a few times on the podcast. Plus, mobile streams to launch stream service in China. Article there. Article on 88 Energy. Merlin 1 Spud on March the 8th. Verici DX initiates first US clinical trial sites for Clarava and Tutefa. Plus, what, there's a sort of video there as well with Paul. I just saw that then. Paul Hill chatting with the guy from Avacta, of course, CEO Alistair, and our COVID-19 index. Don't forget that. Biggest rise of the day, Tizian Life Sciences. Biggest faller, Gene Drive. Tizian is up 9% to 114. Gene Drive's down 6% to 131.5. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now, it's Glenn Goodman. He's the crypto trader. He trades crypto and other stuff, which he doesn't mention in the book.
Yes, sir, that's right. I trade stocks and shares. I trade commodities, currencies, treasury bonds.
All right, ooh, look at me. I'm a dirty old trader. I don't mind what I trade, as long as I made a dirty old profit somewhere along the line.
That's right. I like a dirty profit.
So we've had a bit of a pullback in Bitcoin, but it shot up a little bit yesterday, wasn't it? And it's now pausing a bit again. I think, what do you make? Another leg down, or do you think it's good support now here?
Let's have a look. As you always say, this will become redundant by the time the podcast goes out.
I don't say that.
Do I?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Why are you attributing quotes from you to me?
Sorry,
it's very odd.
I don't know.
As I always say, when there's blood in the streets, you know, when there's fear out there, as I always say that, you know, it wasn't Warren Buffett, I say that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, I would say my last, when did I tweet? I tweeted some days ago. God, I need to tweet more often. February 23rd, yeah, I haven't tweeted.
Don't worry about that, we're going off subject.
Sorry,
go on.
I haven't tweeted. Right, anyway.
Your tweets, we don't care about that.
Okay.
So my frequency of tweeting has gone up a little down a bit this week.
Some days ago, I tweeted a lovely little picture that I put together. What do you call a piece of art that's got four sections to it? Because it's not a triptych, is it?
That
would be three sections. What's the four? This is not a joke. No. What's the four? What do you do? Look, it's like a triptych.
I don't even know what that is.
A triptych or triptych is an artwork consisting of three sections, right? So I created my own artwork consisting of four sections, which I tweeted, and the four sections were comparing drawdowns of Bitcoin at different time periods. So one was from January 2017, one was from June 2017, one was from August 2017, and the last one was from February 2021, the one that we were currently going through. The point was to just make the point that during the 2017 boom, which was absolutely enormous and, you know, arguably even more significant than the one we're currently going through, Bitcoin went down minus 37%, minus 41%, minus 40%. Those were just three of several massive drawdowns that Bitcoin had during that momentous year. Excuse me while I take a sip. Water. And now, our current drawdown it only got to 23% down. Actually, it has gone down a little bit more since then. We had an extra dip, didn't we? So it's more than 23%, but only about, what, 26%, something like that. So the point I was making in my tweet, as I put, was in inverted commas, everyone should chill out a bit. Hey, guys, just chill out. You're all getting, like, really heavy about this whole thing. It's not that big a deal, this drawdown. If you look at it on
can I suggest why
it just looks normal. It looks normal.
Can I suggest why, though, people are making a big deal of it? Isn't basically more people holding, more mainstream people holding now? And maybe I suggest the dip is I did previously say this. I said maybe the crypto winters aren't going to be as long and as cold now because there's a bit more mainstream. There's a bit more people have missed out, willing to buy the dip to get in there, any dip. So do you think there's a bit more support there now, a bit more buying of the dip? It's not going to drop so much. What do you reckon, Glenn?
I think when this bull market is over, when it's finally over, whenever that is, not, you know, dips aside, when this actual bull market is over, there will be a long winter, just as there was with the previous dip and the one before that. And the reason I think that is because, you know, you look at the dot-com crash or any crash in any traditional asset sector, and despite however much support and excitement there is about the fundamentals for that sector, it doesn't prevent a bull market from lasting for years. I mean, Bitcoin's bear markets. I meant bear market, not bull market. The bear markets last for years. Yes, it doesn't stop the bear markets lasting for years. So, for example, the dot-com crash, the bear market lasted for several years before tech stocks started recovering properly. Meanwhile, Bitcoin's bear markets are actually relatively short, as are its bull markets. Its cycles are just, everything's kind of speeded up. Its cycles are just generally quicker than in traditional sectors like stocks and shares or commodities or anything like that. So the Bitcoin bull market, for example, the previous one, only lasted 2 years. And the bear market lasted from December 2017 to October 2020, so almost 3 years of bear, it's not as long as it's nowhere near as long as in stock markets and so on.
It is. Stock markets don't last that long. Bear markets, no, they don't. They last literally.
Well, all right, the one in 2017. No,
generally, that was very quick. But generally, a bear market lasts about 18 months. Tops.
Well, it depends how you define the bear market.
Well, no, I'm going back to 1929 for the S&P, and I got a spreadsheet there that will tell you the average that's down at peak to trough is 18 months. And
Exactly. You're looking at peak to trough. I'm not talking about peak to trough here.
I'll find out what I'm looking at. I'll get it up here.
Because peak to trough is far quicker for Bitcoin. Peak to trough was, let's have a look here. The peak to the main trough of our previous bear market in Bitcoin was only a year. This is in December 2017 to November 18. And then there was a massive recovery in 2019. So I wasn't talking peak to trough. Actually, if you want to compare with 1929, you're looking at a really, really massive drawdown there. Because, peak to trough was only, you know, a few years. I think, what was it, 1929 to 33 was the trough. And this is out of memory. I'm not looking at it right now. But I know that the recovery took so long that the market didn't get back to its previous 1929 high for 27 years. 27 years of dead money for anybody who bought.
Hang on a second. It's not dead money, is it? Because
you got dividends.
Not only that, but it was very volatile. There was massive rallies and some massive falls. So, there was plenty of opportunity.
Yeah, I've been for anyone buying right at the top.
If you're talking about buying the index.
Dead money if you bought right at the top and then didn't sell.
I'm talking about if you bought the index. Years. If you bought the index, yes, maybe so. But not if you'd been looking at individual stocks and stuff like that and sort of, valued them. But
that's quite correct, yes. Share pickers mentality existed even far back then, and people were share picking. What am I talking about? I don't know. I've lost my train of thought.
So from the peak,
I should have woken up earlier this morning, shouldn't I? To get my mind ready for this mental exercise. Yeah,
from the peak to the trough, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out this. It's 207 days. average. So yeah, year and a half. So they don't last as long as bull markets. Bull markets, that's why, you know, if you're investing, it's always play the odds. You know, the odds are on your side that, you know, stocks will go up generally. You know, and every, and I think it's 1 in 3 years as an average. You can't say one every 3 years, but I mean, on average, if you looked at this, stretch it all out, you say, okay, pretty much 2 years it goes up, 1 year it goes down. Not in that order, of course. Sometimes you have 4 years going up and a couple of years maybe do it going down, but generally, you know, there's a 2-to-1 ratio. You're going to be right if you're long compared to being wrong if you're short, you know?
That is true.
So what I'm saying is, can we
jump? True for most markets, yeah. It's just not necessarily true.
I know, but I'm going to say that. That's what I'm saying. But Bitcoin, here's a change now. Can we actually, because it's changing all the time, isn't it? There's more adoption, bigger adoption, institutional adoption. So can we actually judge, you know, current performance of the price on previous performance of the price? Because it's changing. The holders are changing. Everything's changing about it, you know?
I know, but I'm always skeptical about this time it's different kind of narratives, because as you know as well as I do, they're always wrong.
Sometimes they are.
Every single time it feels like this time it will be different, and we all start to think, well, maybe this time really is different, but it always turns out that it isn't different.
I'm going to say it's very hard here, though, to look at this here. I mean, I see it maybe. I've seen so much support in it rolling over like this before. Like, it did this back in the start of the year, right? January, Bitcoin. It hit a high of 40,000, rolled over, had a couple of big down days, rolled down, touched the 50-day moving average, then all of a sudden powered back up. And it had one day where it went up by, 20%? And then it went over 50,000, 56,000, and now it's come back down. And that pattern may happen again. You know, it may come back down,
In terms of temporary dips, I agree with you. We're in a bull market. If you look at it on a daily chart, it looks normal to me. It could be any other market that we're looking at. It could be stocks, any particular stock. It doesn't look like a weird chart, is what I'm saying. It's, you know, the big bull market starts in October 2020, though obviously the price had been slowly rising for some period before that, but October 2020 is when the proper breakout from this long triangle pattern that you and I had talked about for so long. Finally, you got that breakout. It was a clean breakout. So that marks the beginning of the bull market, around about $10,000. We're now at $50,000, which seems sort of crazy in terms of scale. But as I say, when you look at it on a chart, the actual price movement looks pretty normal. You get your up and then you get your correction, and then it gets to a new high and then you get your correction, and then a new high and you get your correction. Like I say, it could be any kind of growth stock that we're looking at here. So yeah, I would expect, as long as that pattern continues, nobody ever knows how long those kind of patterns of recurrence will continue, but that's why I keep an eye on price movement, because as soon as I see something unusual happening, as soon as the pattern stops repeating in such an obvious way, then we'll know that we've got trouble.
We've got trouble ahead.
And that's how I...
But while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance.
Dance.
You spoiled that then. I was doing quite well there.
No, that was in tune. My addition.
With what? And how to sign Bell. Listen. I want to look for a small cap crypto that I think could do very well. What do you think? You know, how many do you hold at the moment, cryptos wise? None or one or what?
No, I've got a few different cryptos right now. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as we speak.
Okay, go on, tell me about them. Tell you, pump your book.
I'm not volunteering to pump my book. I just want to make clear.
Do you know
to
why people don't understand?
Justin is forcing me here. Let me say one thing.
People, every now and again, someone say on the weekend podcast with your friends, you just talk about your stocks. I know that's well. I talk about macro a lot, not in macro, but psychology of investing, things I've learned, all that stuff. But we also come around to any news on stocks I hold, and you're pumping stocks. I'm not pumping. Right, there's a difference. Pumping and dumping is bad. If you're pumping a stock without telling anyone you're selling it, that is disingenuous. It's, you know, really, you know, it's not a good thing to do. That's ethically wrong. If you are promoting a stock because you think there's plenty of value left in the stock, and you believe in the old, skin in the game there, that's fine. If you're not going to sell it in any time, if it's fine. And then they don't want pumping. It's the dumping part that's the worst. No one likes a dumper, you know. And I don't want to dump. Pumping's fine if it's warranted. If it's warranted.
I mean, you know.
I don't say pumping. Oh, that idiot. He's been an idiot. I mean, I'm talking about promotion. What I'm talking about, I took my stocks. I've talked about, say, a stock I've held for like maybe a year. And all of a sudden, I've been talking about it for a while. And 6 months online, someone said, oh, listen, I didn't know you were in this stock. Do you know anything about it? And I said, well, I've been talking about it for 6 months. So there are people at different, you know, levels of a discovery on stocks. You know, like some people will not know I hold certain stocks and other stocks. And so, you know, every now and while one person may say, oh, you've talked about that stock now every weekend. And I said, well, yeah. But then someone may say, oh, that's the first time I've heard you mention that stock. So it's hard to know which page everyone's on, you know. So promotion is fine. Sharing information about a stock you think has lots of value left in it, you know, climate appreciating value, it's fine. So if you've got cryptos there, Glenn, and you think are going to do well, and you're not just doing it to dump it, when you shouldn't do anyway, there's plenty of liquidity in the market, I suppose. But I mean, there's no reason why. And the thing is, you know more about those because you hold them.
I agree to some extent, but the problem is, as we know from, you know, if you spend much time on crypto Twitter, as they call it, for example, you will see some very rich people just continually pumping or trying to pump Bitcoin in such painfully obvious ways the whole time. Yeah. You know, just putting hashtag Bitcoin with a picture of a rocket going to a moon and stuff like that. And sure, I know the point is the reason they own so much Bitcoin is because they have confidence in it. So to some extent, they're not being disingenuous. But the relentlessness of their positivity is, I think, disingenuous, because they refuse to see any negatives and they refuse to ever warn anybody about the downsides of this investment, whether it be Bitcoin or anything else. I mean, look, there's, you know, Ruffer, the British asset manager Ruffer, mm-hmm, who has famously bought Bitcoin before pretty much any other asset manager. Yeah, they were one of the first.
Yeah.
And, you know, now they're being so positive about Bitcoin. They're saying, let's have a look. They're saying that they're calling their entry into the Bitcoin market last year early. We think we are relatively early to this, at the foothills of a long trend of institutional adoption and financialization of Bitcoin, Ruffer said, which manages $28.3 billion of investor money in their half-year report. Think of Bitcoin's bad reputation as a risk premium. As we move through the process of normalization, regulation, and institutionalization, the compression of this premium can have a dramatic effect on the price. All right, I haven't read their entire report, so maybe there's some negativity in there that I haven't seen. But at the moment, they're painting a very optimistic picture of the future, of a process of normalization, regulation, and institutionalization of Bitcoin. Now, that may well happen, but there are a lot of pitfalls potentially on the way that they're not mentioning in the course of that sentence. The process of regulation and institutionalization could possibly kill Bitcoin almost stone dead, right? It's quite possible if the US government decides to clamp down on the conversion of fiat currency into Bitcoin, as we've talked about many times on this podcast. If that happened, and we know Janet Yellen isn't a fan of Bitcoin, so if that happened, that would be
Janet,
very, very bad for Bitcoin.
Janet, what did you show the party for, Janet? Janet's not with it, though, is she? You know, why are people?
Sorry, you get the point. The point is,
no, listen. People
They don't want to give a downer. They don't want to discourage people from investing in it.
No, a balanced view is always is good. I mean, I'm not talking about sort of you know, just ramping with no facts, just saying it's going to the moon with no explanation of why. I'm talking about people, you know, those guys, like, I suppose, what's his name? Pomp and that Mike, Mike Koretsvitz, what's his name?
Michael Saylor, you're thinking of? MicroStrategy, who's invested tons and tons of his company's money in Bitcoin.
No, Mike Svaravit, he's a billionaire. He's always on CNBC talking about it. Bald head guy, round head.
Novogratz.
So they've got a lot of money in it. They're doing very well. And they probably believe it. And they probably believe it's the next goal. So I can see why they are sort of... And they've been proved right so far, pretty much, from where... Because they were very early adopters, you know? So so I can see that. But yeah, but you'd think even, you know, Musk can have a bit of sensibility, fella. You know, just don't sort of talk about stupid rockets and all that stuff. Grow up, you know. So I think, yeah, there we are. But no, I mean, they could be right. I think of it when I did those three videos.
They could be right, but they could be wrong. That's the point.
Yeah, and when people are like, oh my God, they talk so much. That's for us to decide,
though. Yeah, they're definitely right.
Surely we know that, though. Surely we know they could be right, could be wrong.
A lot of people don't know that, and that's what annoys me, you see, is that a lot of people have bought in fully into that narrative. People are suckers for narratives. Everybody is. We all are. We love stories. Human beings love stories, right?
The most powerful thing in the world.
And so this narrative that the bulls have fed people has been bought hook, line, and sinker, which is why the price is rising so relentlessly at the moment. So there is an element of self-fulfilling prophecy about it. But, you know, the future of Bitcoin is far from guaranteed because governments.
What's guaranteed, though? Nothing's guaranteed, is it? Sure.
A lot of people talk as if Bitcoin's future is guaranteed. A lot of people.
Yeah, but a lot of people talk about.
I spend too much time on Twitter. Maybe this is the problem.
No, it is. Twitter's just a microcosm of idiots and echo chamber. But listen, when I say that, it's an echo chamber of idiots. So you're one. But no. What I'm saying is, there are plenty of people who talk about the stocks like that as well. Like there's guaranteed nil. There's risks everywhere. But you've got to assume the risks as well. You've got to know the risk. Anyone who gets burned doesn't look in the risk. Just takes people's tweets at face value. Said, okay, I'm going to buy this. They're going to get burned anyway. Sooner or later, someone's going to scam them. Sooner or later, they're going to get found out or they're going to get tucked up in some way. If they're that naive that they genuinely believe that rockets on a tweet means an investment is guaranteed, then they're going to get burned sooner or later because they're so naive and they need to learn the lesson of getting burned because that's one of the best ways I've learned in the stock market. You go into the stock market to earn money, it hits you exactly where you don't want it to hit if you get wrong. And that's why you learn very quickly or there's game over. So I think, I don't care. I do care people losing their money, of course, and being, skint. But I mean, what I'm saying is you have to learn. The best way of learning is feeling some pain. That's human.
Well, a lot of people who write to me who've read my book say, I wish I'd read your book before the 2018 crash because I lost so much money in it. And
yeah, but so did a lot of people, even professionals.
I'm backing up your point here, which is that, they learned a valuable lesson through the money that they lost. And in most cases, the people who write to me didn't lose too much money, so it didn't ruin their life. It was just, in most cases, but those it was people, just a case of, they lost a bit, it scared them, and now they're reading a book to learn how to do it properly.
Exactly.
So, as you say,
so that's good. They're still seeking education, how to learn, and that's it. To them, if you lose, you can go one of two ways. You can treat it as a lesson, you can learn from it and get better, or you can just carry on doing what you're doing, head in the sand, or deny everything that was your fault, or crack on. People who are clever and get better at investing tend to seek education, want to learn. And that's the thing. Losing is learning. That's where you learn that. So, and the first thing, that's one of my first lessons ever, is risk. And one of those risk factors is don't overexpose yourself, because if you mess up, and you're out of the game, you can't learn anymore. That's it. Game over for you. So one of the first lessons you'd learn, never overexpose yourself in one stock. I mean, you could do it later, maybe 10 years down the line, 5 years down the line, when you have experience, you'd be confident, and you've summed up a company completely, and you think, well, okay, I think the risks are very, very low here compared with the prices. Then fair enough. Go big, but not when you start off, because that's, that's dangerous. And so, yeah. But, learning lessons. They're one of the same thing, really. Anyway, we're trying to get on to... these small, cap sort of crypto stocks. Come on, this is the longest disclaimer I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Okay, so what do I own currently? One that I'd like to mention, which actually I first mentioned on this podcast a couple of years ago, I think.
Okay.
So I have held this for a long time. And it's because it's a company that I got involved with personally for a while. I mean, I haven't spoken to them for a couple of years now, but I did a quick bit of work for them about 2 years ago. And that's how I got interested. Coty. Do you remember me mentioning them? COTI?
Probably not.
It was a while ago. Coty is a potential Bitcoin killer. That's the idea of it. Basically, they've taken all the limitations of Bitcoin, such as the lack of scalability, the enormous transaction costs when the Bitcoin network is busy, that kind of thing. And they've tried to find solutions for all those problems. And I had a deep dive into their technology a couple of years ago, and I was very impressed with what I saw. Like right into the code. Justin. I was like that, you know, Neo in the Matrix when he's surrounded by all the actual code, all the bits and the bytes.
Are you a coder?
I've done a bit of coding. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a coder. I've only done basic coding, but yeah.
So what size is it? Where is it? I can't find it. So what's the ticker? I'm looking on CoinMarketCap here.
COTI.
COTI. Where can I buy this?
You can buy it on Binance, for example.
I'm not on that. All I've got is Coinbase.
Oh, poor you. They don't do many cryptos. Let me have a look. Hold on.
138 million market cap. That's quite small for a thing, isn't it?
It is, exactly. It's like anything less than a billion is considered quite small for a crypto these days.
Do they?
140 million market cap, yeah. And if you look at the chart, you'll see that it's even more than Bitcoin. It's rising relentlessly. And what I found particularly interesting from a technical perspective at the moment is not just the positive chart, but if you actually look at, rather than looking at COTI against the dollar, if you look at COTI against BTC, against Bitcoin, COTI slash BTC, what you'll see is that the price of COTI against Bitcoin.
Are you kidding me? Look at the size of that. The chart has gone nuts.
Yeah, I know.
It's gone from $16,000 up to $49,000 in the last. Well, I can't do charts on here, but January the 30th, it was at. Was it 10,000? No, there's volume. Hang on, price. What's the price? No, hang on. I got this wrong. Sorry. It's 0.05, isn't it? It was the price was on the 27th of January. And now it's
yeah, so 0.05 of a dollar. So that's 5 cents.
0.2.
It was at.
Yeah. So it's
and now it's at 20 cents. So it's quadrupled in the space of about a month or so.
What do you like about this thing, Dan? I'm going to put some money in now if I can. If I can get, I can't find it on my thing there.
Yeah, let me have a look. COTI, what markets does it trade on? It trades on Binance and KuCoin.
Is Binance okay?
Is
Binance okay to...
It doesn't trade on any of the most respectable ones. Is Binance okay? That's a difficult question because on one hand, it's the biggest exchange in the world by miles. It pretty much dominates the entire Bitcoin and crypto market.
So oh, hang on, I did
it's
have a
very, very significant.
I did have a Binance account.
But it's. I was going to say the negatives are it's not regulated in the States. There are exchanges like Kraken and Coinbase, which are based in the States and regulated to some degree in the States. They're not regulated like a proper stock exchange is, but they're regulated at least a bit because they're a US business. And as a result, they are at least theoretically safer places for your money. I mean, the companies could still go bankrupt and you could still lose any money that you have in there, but at least they're based in America and respectable. Binance, it's a Chinese exchange originally, but then it was kind of made a bit of a pariah by the Chinese government, it appeared, or there were rumors and nobody was ever quite sure. And it's still the case is nobody is ever quite sure because they said they were moving to Malta. They were seem to be based in Malta for a bit, but then nobody's quite sure. So it's a bit scary. They're the world's biggest trading exchange, and I do give them my business sometimes, but you know, they are quite an unknown quantity in terms of their location and complete lack of regulation.
Okay.
There's your disclaimer for Binance. But
thing is, I've already got.
If you want to trade anything like COTI, you have to go to Binance. There isn't much choice.
Yeah, is there anything else then? Because I'm looking through my all assets on Coinbase. I've got an account set up with those, and it's a lot easier, you know. So, just, anything else you can look forward to?
Yeah, other ones that I own currently are
also where the chart isn't like you know stratospherically risen already. It's something a bit sensible.
Comp. Well, unfortunately, all the charts are a bit crazy at the moment.
So that's what I'm saying. Do you know what? I was looking through stocks as well, and there are very few. I like to look at the. For me, I like to look at market cap sub 20 million, almost sub 10 million. Last 5 years, I've looked at stocks, right? You can't beat this stat. The biggest rises in every year, okay, 80% of them started with below 20 million market cap. 70% below 10 million. I'm looking around at the moment, and there's nothing much there. And that tells me the market is quite high. It needs to sell off. There's no bargains out there at the moment. And the ones I'm looking at, you know, just not there. It's just, you know.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, let me quickly mention the one, seeing as people are probably going to be wondering, seeing as we've been sort of proclaiming that I'm about to say what I own. So I've got BNB, I've got Uni, I've got Comp, and Coty, as I mentioned. I'm actually even flirting a bit with Doge in and out of that, you know, the one that Elon Musk keeps ramping. But that's more of a bit of fun.
It's Compound.
Kind of trading in and out of that.
Comp is Compound,
yeah.
Okay,
and
that's
it's
tradable.
It's a really serious, excellent piece of technology.
Is it? Okay, so that's tradable on what's the name?
DeFi revolution that we've talked about on here, decentralized finance, Compound's involved in that. Also Uni, which I said is Uniswap. Now, the thing is, at the high levels they're at now, you're really looking at continuation buys, you know, buying for after a correction, looking for a continuation of the main trend. Whereas what you like to do is look for really early stage breakouts.
Yeah.
And as I say, there aren't many of those about now because the sector is so hot that everything that's worth buying is already being bought and broken out. So that's why this is sort of continuation buy time, really.
Yeah, so essentially, we've got to wait for the break, haven't we? So if it's going to break higher, can it break higher? Maybe, probably. What's the chances? I don't know if it will. But I'm thinking rollover, maybe a bit more selling. Do you think? It's got to, you know. We've had the euphoria, haven't we? It's happened. Huh?
You think this is the top, because we've had all so much public euphoria.
It could do another rally up, couldn't it?
I mean, the chart certainly looks that way, doesn't it? It doesn't feel like a top to me. Not like it did in 2017 when I put that now famous warning on my Facebook page saying, warning, it looks like, you know, words to the effect of it looks like we might have hit the top. Okay. Not sure yet, let's keep an eye on it, but it could be the top.
How about
it felt like a top back then, whereas now it doesn't feel like a top. It's just there's too much support in the market, like you said. There's too many potential buyers. Every time the price falls a bit, there are still people willing to jump in there and buy more of it.
How about Orchid?
Could be the start of a top. Could be the start of a top, like the dot-com boom in 2000, because let's not forget that took about a year to roll over the market back then.
Yeah, exactly. Let me I'll give you a list of coins that's tradable on Coinbase. You tell me if you've heard of them. Orchid.
I've traded Orchid.
Numerair. Balancer.
Yeah.
Protocol. New site.
I know all of these. I've traded most of them.
Augur is quite good, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's held by KR1, I think.
Yes, a lot of these are really good projects as well, things that might be important in the future of this world.
Market cap 279. Okay. All right. Well, I'm just going to... It's not time yet, but I'm just keeping an eye out, you know, because it's going to be a big sell-off somehow, isn't it? Anyway, anything else, Glenn, worth chatting about? Anything quickly before we move on to our lives?
What lives just left? Very quickly, you might have heard about Citi, you know, Citigroup. They are one of the biggest banks in the world. They put out a report on Bitcoin a few days ago, which was quite bullish, and everybody got very excited. But the Financial Times has absolutely torn apart that report, and quite rightly so. It was a shoddy piece of work. Quite remarkable from one of the world's biggest banks, written by people who are no doubt paid huge amounts of money. And it's like it's written in parts by a child, Justin.
Why? What do they say?
Because there's just so many inaccuracies in it, but like blatant inaccuracies. They say things like, hold on, because I haven't got it in front of me. I don't want to libel them. Jemima Kelly in the Times, in the Financial Times, rather, wrote an excellent thing on it. I mean, I'd already looked at parts of the report and seen how bad it was, but she did a deep dive and she found that, for example, they had a graphic that said, oh yeah, that's right, but lots of people had taken the mickey out of this one. They said 36% of small to medium businesses in the US are now accepting Bitcoin in the year 2020.
What? 36%?
36%.
How did that get past anywhere? Medium business. I know, but that's nuts. How did that get past anyone vaguely in authority with a brain, half a brain?
It wasn't even just in the text. It was that they made an actual graphic for that not true fact. I mean, it's clearly absolute nonsense. Nobody knows what percentage of small, medium businesses in the US are actually accepting Bitcoin. But the FT found the source was a small website, a small Bitcoin-focused website that they'd just taken the figure from and just quoted it verbatim as if it's like, yeah, this is definitely true. I mean, it's ridiculous. The report was full of nonsense and... yeah, I just find it astonishing, you know, because it's kind of an emperor's new clothes moment when you realize that all these highly paid bankers are, you know, aren't quite what they're cracked up to be.
Yeah, no, it's well, I think one of the biggest turnarounds was on Bitcoin, wasn't it, for either Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, where they were ultra bearish. And then turns out it sold off and all of a sudden they became very bullish again.
Actually, that's a point. Goldman Sachs have just announced they're opening their crypto trading desk again. And this is interesting because it marked the top of the market in 2017 when Goldman Sachs said, we're going to start allowing Bitcoin trading for our clients. And here we go. We've opened a whole trading desk. And then the market crashed down, 90%, 85%, 90%. So, you know, that marked the top in 2017. And now they've announced it again, so maybe there's one of those top signs that you're looking for.
Yeah, more of the stuff. I'm after a top sign. Lovely, cheers for that, Glenn. And we'll speak you next week if you're not all dead.
Yeah,
okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Gene Drive, down 6% to 131.5. At four, McColl's, up 20% to 33.11. At three, Amigo Holdings, up 16% to 19.35. At two, Cellular Goods, up two. Wow, just fell then. Seven, as I looked at it, just fell. It was up 2%, now it's fallen 7% to 12.5. And at one, Napster, of course, it was MVR, Melody VR. It's changed the name Napster now, streaming service as well, music. That's number one, most followed. Non-mover right there. Okay, top five, most read RNSs are as follows. Braveheart Investment Group Holdings, Alba Minerals, Clockeye St. David's Gold Mine Update at four. Sorry, the joint fifth, that was. MGC Pharmaceuticals Increased Initial Supply Agreement with Artemisi. At three, Boohoo Response to Media Commentary. That's but the US maybe stopping their supplying clothes there because I don't know where they come from. Amigos at two. And at one, Amiga Diagnostics contract with Screen 4. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.